Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. He's speaking to us from San Francisco. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for inviting me on. Always a pleasure.
Usually you're in South Florida, but you're in San Fran. Is the city in ruins? That's the reports we get from the outside, that it's been overtaken by drug dealers and drug users.
Nah. I lived in San Francisco for 22 years, and I had a lot of good times. I enjoyed the town, and it's changed in certain ways. It's, I would say, not as much fun. I was in my 20s then and early 30s, and it seemed like, or actually my 30s, but everything going on in San Francisco is geared to young people having fun, but I'm not quite sure what the young people are doing. I think they're just eating avocado toast and calling it a day. But the city has taken a real beating in some key areas like Union Square and the theater district just below it. But that's quite a loss. You know, you've had some great department stores, Neiman, Macy's, Gump's, they all bit the dust. But the city's done something really interesting. This was a headline in yesterday's paper. They've hired an outside firm that specializes in reviving, in reclaiming for the people, so to speak, places that have decayed in big cities. So they're presenting free concerts and free this and free that, just to get people used to the idea that there are things happening in Union Square. And it's sort of a cart before the horse. It might sound like a cart before the horse solution, but if you give that Union Square a little bit, bring some vitality back to it, it's possible that all these people who no longer work in the office towers will want to return to them. I was surprised, pleasantly surprised, to see that San Francisco is doing good things. And also, there's so much vitality to the rest of the city. There's so many neighborhoods that are just not even on the mend. They're really just sort of being built. One near Potrero Hill, where I lived for the last few years that I was in San Francisco, and there's a lot of expensive apartment buildings going up there, and they're just whole neighborhoods that are that Mission Bay. For one, it's like a whole other city. So San Francisco, you really can't kill it. And the park is better than ever. They've not only maintained it, they've improved it. And it was one of the great parks of the whole world to begin with. So if you live on either side of the park in the Richmond neighborhood or the Sunset, you have a world-class amenity right there. And the views, of course, are still spectacular. So San Francisco has a lot to recommend it. I'm not moving here right away. I did sell my place in Florida. I got tired of summer heat. And, you know, three or four months of 90-degree-plus days where every day you wake up and it says temperature is 91, feels like 103. So I'd had enough of that. But it is expensive to live in San Francisco because nobody's leaving, and or not as many people are leaving as you might think. So if you want a good roomy apartment with a nice view, you're paying $8,000 for it or more. So that is a little bit of a drawback.
Now, the stock markets, the end of last week, we had the big meltdown. What's their situation now?
It's in a fraudulent rally. And since everybody knows that the bear market has begun, in part because there are probably 50 good reasons why it should have begun, it means that this rally is going to have to go far enough. The balance will have to carry far enough that even guys like me will start doubting myself as to whether we're going to get new highs. But if this bear rally is what I think it is, it may even take a marginal new high in the S&Ps to suck everybody in. But right now, the E-mini S&Ps are trading 53.29, and I've got them going to, this is a September contract, to exactly 5573.50. And, you know, it's a tradable bullishly from here to that number. If it blows through that number, then I think we will get a marginal new high, but that would be quite a deceptive hook. I think it would suck everybody in, and so I'm open to the possibility that even though I'm calling it a bear rally, it might achieve a marginal new high above the one that was recorded in early July.
I know that the situation on the stock markets gained the attention of the mainstream news. By the time they notice something, is it too late?
I don't think so. I think that by the time they notice something, that it's certainly wrong, whatever they've noticed. But they notice so many things that you really can't keep track of it all. So if you really want a little bit of clarity as to what's going on in the markets, tune out all the blithering idiots that they have on Bloomberg and you know, the talking heads on television, and get out there in a blog world where there's some competent technicians who can tell you what's going on.
Or subscribe to Rick's Picks.
They could do that too. Free trial subscription, and if you take a full year and don't make your money back, I will refund it. But yeah, I do purely technical forecasting, and sometimes it gives me forecasts that I'm having trouble parsing. You know, one right now, the 30-year interest rate is, let's see what it is. It's 4.29%. And the consensus says that rates can only go up, but I've got them coming down to 3.67%. And the only sense I can make of that is that we're in for one humdinger of a recession. So, and one other thing, don't pay any attention to any interest rate forecast where they don't mention the fact of real rates or nominal rates, because when I say 3.67%, it doesn't mean that we're going to get some sort of relief from lower rates, because at that point, asset values will be falling. We will be, in other words, rates will be chasing asset values and economic activity, for that matter, lower, and we'll be getting lower interest rates, but in a deflationary environment. And to understand deflation, we've talked about this before, forget about money supply and all that garbage. The only thing you need to know is that in a deflation, the real burden of debt increases. So we felt that very much in the 2007 and 2008 great financial crash, the real estate collapse, where the mortgage rates were relatively low then. But of course, even borrowing at 3% can kill you financially if your home is losing 10% of its value in a year, which houses did back then over a period of nearly 3 years. So always pay attention to whether these talking heads are speaking of nominal rates or real rates, because it's the real burden of debt that matters, and it's interest rates versus the rate of inflation that counts.
The inflation numbers we're seeing in the U.S. Still relatively high enough, perhaps, to keep the Fed from lowering rates?
I don't even pay attention to the Fed, or, well, more more to the point, I don't pay attention to all the attention that's paid to the Fed. The market has been so obsessed about it, but you can see where the whole world was wrong. The obsession with rates, let's take you back to the beginning of this year. There was universal expectation that the Fed would loosen like crazy in 2024. And in this Fed obsessed financial world we live in, that was a big deal. You know, everybody's thinking, yeah, they're going to loosen, and some of the blithering idiots, these so-called experts, were saying, oh, they're going to loosen six times in this year. So we get to January, and it turns out the Fed doesn't loosen at all, and Powell makes that pretty clear. And you would think that a market obsessed with rates and Fed policy, Fed intentions, would fall apart, but it didn't. It just kept going higher. And what that tells you is the market doesn't really give a damn about interest rates or the Fed or anything or earnings. It's just in a massive manic bull cycle. So nothing mattered. But I think it's pretty predictable. It's been predictable all along that when Wall Street finally got what it wanted and Powell said something about pivoting, that the bull market would be over. So that's where we are right now. The bull market's over because the Fed is finally looking, let's say, increasingly agreeable toward easing.
Why do people so much call for rate cuts when in the past, Bob Hoy, our market historian, points out, when the rates start coming down, you're on your way to recession?
Yeah, I mean that's kind of what I just said, and of course Bob always makes pretty good sense. He's a student of history, among other things, and it's true. Some things, counterintuitive things, happen, and everybody's saying loosen so we can goose economic activity, but the loosening comes as a result of an economic slowdown that at this point can't be arrested.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. What's the story with gold?
Well, I don't think it's bottom, really. I've got some bullish discussion going on in my chat room. Actually today concerning silver, but I'm looking at silver and, the recent correction low, it should have gone no lower than 27.41 basis of September contract, but we're rallying from it did bounce. It took a bounce, almost exactly from that number, but then it headed lower and touched $26.50. So I think we're still corrective in silver and gold. And we haven't seen the lows, but I'm willing to suspend judgment here based on certain things that happen. If September silver pops above $29.63, that's $2 from here, then I would I'd look again at the bullish case. But I do think we're going to correct more. And Jim Kunstler made a really, he made the point as simply as you can that we're in this economic downturn that could get worse than anything we've seen in our lifetime. And, people are going to they're going to need to sell things to raise cash. And of course, because gold and silver are the only things we could sell that have any real value, they're going to get sold. So I think that initially, at least, we're going to be still correcting in bullion, especially if the economy weakens to the point where you have some forced liquidations.
What's happening with copper?
Funny you should ask, because I haven't really even looked at copper in a while, but let's take a look at a graph here. Copper, Doc Copper, always, knowing what's happening with the economy, has come down really hard. It was trading at over $5 $5.13 a pound back in May, but it's come down. It's trading today below $4 a pound. So we've had a bear market, really, in copper. And I think it could come down from the current $3.97, find a bottom maybe 30 or 40 cents below where it's trading here. So if copper, I guess you could say, well, the jury's not in because we don't have official recession. Usually we have to be in recession for about, 18 months for any of those, or the geniuses who track the statistics declare recession. We don't get that declaration until recession is fully upon us. But it looks like Doc Copper will have been prescient in making its top back in May.
And, of course, they call it Dr. Copper because it indicates which way the economy's going?
Right. Yeah. Right. And I don't know. I've never really been comfortable with the theory of it, the market for copper. There was a time, I guess it was probably 30 years ago, when things were, the world was going digital with such a vengeance that we thought that all the telephone wire, telephone poles and cable that would be needed to wire up Africa, we wouldn't need all that copper simply because communication would be by satellite. But of course, we've found other uses for copper, especially in electric vehicles and some other things. So the demand has continued. But I guess copper, for reasons that have evolved, is a good predictor of economic activity.
Uranium had a nice burst. Is it still something that's glowing?
Well, the uranium, we've talked a bit about that here and there. I'm certainly no uranium expert. I'm a little bit of a uranium skeptic because the story's been around as long as the coal story. The great big coal's day was always going to return, and uranium was going to have its day as well. We've got these small reactors that, if they ever come into widespread use, would create demand for uranium. And I think that long term prospects are good. We're not going to shift into another way of producing power more easily than we would with nuclear power. So I think that that nukes or have an edge looking out over the next 20 years.
Well, getting back to copper. With AI, it's a tremendous user of electricity, just like mining crypto. While you combine the two of them, that's a huge drain on the generation system, and power generators are just great big reels of wound up copper.
Well, I every time I hear the AI, I run in the other direction. I think the story's a fraud, and I'm still... to me, AI is, I've mentioned before, is just spell check. And when you talk about these quote-unquote large language models that can't even take a sentence, you can't dictate a sentence into a phone and have it come out even remotely right, that's AI. And, I see an interesting application of it here in San Francisco. These self-driving Waymo vehicles are all over the place, and I would say they're doing better than I might have imagined. I haven't seen any of them crash. I haven't stepped into one. It's sort of creepy getting into a car without a driver. But AI is it's everybody's answer for everything. Even San Francisco. Somebody bought a building south of Market, office building for $40 million that was on the books for $140 million. The guy said, "I think that AI is going to bring back San Francisco's economy." So, and of course, Apple has slapped in some AI piece of garbage that they bought from another company because the iPhone needed AI something or other. Rick's Picks, we now use, we're Rick's Picks AI now. Yeah. With the AI-based forecast. So I don't know about all the copper that's going to get used because of AI. I'm not a believer in AI.
Well, the jobs that it's going to replace, what's going to happen to those workers?
That I do believe in. You know, yeah. Wherever you have AI struggling for a handhold in some business, some industry, its sole purpose is to eliminate jobs. So, heaven forbid McDonald's should be any smarter with AI than it already is. You walk in and there's a place that has counter service, nominal counter service, and a drive through, and they figured out how to do that with just two employees, but I'm guessing that eventually McDonald's will be able to run a counter and a takeout window with zero people working there. Someone just from home throws a switch and it turns the McDonald's on at 6 a.m. and it does it all. So that is really the primary application and goal of AI right now, is just to eliminate people wherever it can.
Well, when it comes to self-driving vehicles in Nevada, they're experimenting with convoys of self-driving semi-trailer trucks where you have 10 trucks and then there's 11th one with a human in it following behind. So if one of them has a flat tire or an air brake hose becomes disconnected, there's a human to fix it.
Yeah, and that has always been easy to imagine, that if all cars were driverless, they would follow on some track and they could go 80 miles an hour, 4 inches apart, and there'd never be any problem. The problem is we've got a fleet of cars that's still, 98% with drivers, maybe it may even be more than that. And I don't see any sign that driver cars are going away anytime soon. So it's really the mix, I think, of driver and driverless that creates danger. But sure, you can take Nevada and find some stretch of road that goes 200 miles without a traffic signal or a bend in the road, and string trucks there like Arapaho beads, and they'll do just fine at high speeds. But that I think will continue to progress. They want to eliminate truckers. But just follow the money wherever AI is getting purchased, and you'll see that it's just a scheme to eliminate jobs. Fortunately, they'll never eliminate my job or yours.
Sure, that's what. And of course, there's that old joke: a guy gets on a flight, and an announcement comes on. This is the world's first totally automated airline flight. Nothing can go wrong. Go wrong. Go wrong.
Yeah.
And of course, you watch shows like iRobot, Asimov's Rules for Robots. They can't harm a human or through their inaction cause a human to be harmed. And yet some robot decides to go rogue and harm humans. A wiring defect. Just like in humans, we have wiring defects and we have defective humans.
Well, but we've all seen the movie, and we know what HAL 9000 can do, and I think we're on our guard, and we also know that if you just pull the plug, you're back in business.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
Well, I would say just signs of recession. It's been there for middle America all along. Not that it's slowed down the those who got rich the easy way, just with assets that grew in value. But the middle class has been in a wallow for some time, facing higher and higher fixed costs with nothing, very little relief there on the income side. So, by and large, I think you want to be out of debt. And that's one of the reasons I sold my house in Florida. I just thought it'd be better to be in cash right now, and I've been saying that for a lot of years, but I finally did it, and I'm just going to be a renter for a while. So it's going to take a while for deflation to come a roaring, because we're still in a consumer inflation that's affected by higher shipping costs and higher material costs, higher everything. But I think we may have peaked really, and we'll be feeling more and more deflation taking root in the economy.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us from San Francisco.
Well, thanks for inviting me on, Jim. It is truly a pleasure.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com, and he's also offering a free trial subscription. So check out his website. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.